Over the past 34 years, Barb Ryan has become a science and leadership mainstay here at the USGS. So why is she leaving? And where is she going? You'll find out next on this episode of CoreCast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special internal episode of the USGS CoreCast. I'm Dave Hebert, and I am pleased to be joined by Barb Ryan, AD for Geography. Barb, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, Dave. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. So it's been 34 years since you stepped through the door here at the USGS, but now you've decided to move on to the directorship of the World Meteorological Organization's space program in Geneva, Switzerland. And first of all, I got to tell you, I really admire the personal sacrifice you're making to move to such a horrible, right. Hideous place like Geneva,
right.
Switzerland.
Right.
That must be tough.
you know, it's funny that you would say that. So, of course, it's going to be one of the most beautiful cities in the world. Oh. In fact, somebody came forward and said, you know, they saw a list of kind of the top 10 places to live in the world. Well, Zurich was number one and Geneva was number two.
How convenient.
Yeah.
How convenient. I've only seen pictures, but it's just stunning.
But, you know, quite honestly, I have some reservations, too, because this will be the first time that my husband and I have lived out of the country.
Ah.
And so I think that's going to be some, that'll be an adjustment in and of itself.
Sure. Well, we'll talk a little bit about that. But all joking aside, you've had a long and very successful run here. So why the change? Why this big change?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, Dave. And it's time. You know, after 34 years in the Geological Survey, and I think it is absolutely one of the best organizations to work for, not just government organizations, just plain organizations to work for. There have been bumps along the way. There have been highs along the way. But it's time. You know, when you find yourself in meetings and some things start to come back that came back 10 years ago and the issues maybe haven't changed, then you realize that, you know, it's time for just new thinking to come into the organization. And quite honestly, I actually feel like I've got a good 5 or 10 years left of just energy that I want to put towards something, and I'd like to put it toward something else.
Well, good. All right. So tell us a little bit about the WMO space program and talk about your role as director there.
Yeah. So the World Meteorological Organization is a specialized agency of the United Nations. So it's part of the United Nations organization, but maybe much like the World Health Organization, they're considered specialized agencies. So, and it's a big organization. So as director of their space program, the primary responsibilities will be to continue to urge, coordinate Earth observations from space. Historically, it's been on the meteorological side, so that would be atmospheric observations, weather satellites, and so they work very closely with the weather organizations around the world, in Russia, in Europe, here in the United States, and that would be NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric and Oceanic Organization. But over the last couple of years, with the advent of just wider awareness of the role that space observations can play to issues that affect all of us, kind of the world citizenry, then they really want to bring some other assets to the table. So not just the weather satellites and the oceanic satellites, but maybe some of the terrestrial observing satellites. And of course, I've got experience with our Landsat satellites, and so that's the part that I think I was most excited about.
Right. Sounds like a line of work that you'll slide into pretty comfortably.
So it's largely a coordination function, you know, because you're trying to build relationships and partnerships so that people willingly come to the table to share their information.
Right, right. So you mentioned NOAA. Will your new position have you working with the USGS at all?
Yes, definitely. Again, from this terrestrial observation perspective. Okay.
Okay.
We'll continue to work with NOAA from an oceanic and atmospheric perspective, continue to work with NASA for some of its satellite information, but very definitely would like to see the kind of Earth observation data that the USGS collects to become part of the portfolio, part of the sharing of that information with WMO, the
Great.
World Meteorological Organization.
Well, that is good to know. So have you spent much time in Geneva? And more importantly, are you going to be living near the lake and or the ski slopes?
I haven't spent a lot of time in Geneva. There have been a couple GEO meetings, Group on Earth Observation meetings, that have been held in Geneva and actually at the World Meteorological Organization building, which is fairly impressive in and of itself. And Geneva is right on the lake, and you look out a window and see the Alps, much like our people in Denver look out the window and see the Rocky Mountains. So close to the lake. Close to skiing, yes and yes to both of those.
Wow, not a bad prospect. So let's get back to the USGS a little bit. What are you going to miss about being here?
You know what? Number one, the people, good friends and very, very talented colleagues that I have had an opportunity to work with for over the last 34 years. So people, absolutely number one. And then I guess number two, just the energy and creativity that's generated by those people. And just kind of an attitude of let's do whatever we have to do to kind of get the job done at hand. So I'm gonna miss people and what products come from people.
Sure. And you started to touch on this a little bit before, but what sort of things are you not going to miss about being here?
Yeah. You know, I am not going to miss, although someone will say, with moving to a UN organization, you've actually just traded off one bureaucracy for even a bigger bureaucracy. But I'm not going to miss the bureaucratic aspects of the position. There are just so many more demands now on managers in the organization that you have to try very, very hard to get back to what the core reasons are for you being in an organization, because many of your day-to-day tasks are just bureaucratic, and I'm not going to miss that. I believe very, very strongly in not only this director's, but the last couple directors, probably going back to Gordy Eaton, a vision of organizational change and getting back to better integration across all of our disciplines and getting closer to the science on the ground. I am 100% sold on what needs to be done. I think we have some internal challenges that over the next 5 or 10 years, as an institution, I personally don't believe we're going to be, let's say that out at our science level, science center level, field center level is where the lion's share of our work gets done. I'm not in any way denigrating the role of coordination and program setting that has to be done by program coordinators back here. But if we look at our science centers, I don't believe in the long run we are going to be able to afford as an institution a RECS layer, a regional director layer, and an AD layer. I think the big challenge for the organization over the next couple years, 5 certainly, is that we've got to look at the organizational bureaucracy above the field center level, and more change is going to be needed there.
Okay. Now, you've done quite a bit here at the USGS. You've worked in water science, mapping. You've been chief financial officer and chief information officer, which I did not know until I did a little research for this interview. So what have been the highlights for you? What are the things you look back on most proudly or fondly?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I can almost, if you've got a little time, I could almost go through each of the geographic locations. When I started out as a GS5 hydrologic technician in the organization, I absolutely loved the field work that I did in Colorado. I got to see so much of that state, from the High Plains to the Rocky Mountains, and I look back at the water resources investigation in Crowley County, Colorado, that a couple of us did down there. A couple people that actually are about retiring about the same time I am, Doug Kane and Pat Emmons, worked on that very closely together, and it was just a great, great, great work. The next couple locations, as I was kind of transitioning from the hydrologic technician series into the hydrologist series, then we really got to delve into some low-level radioactive waste studies. A couple in Illinois, Sheffield site and then in Rhode Island. And as I look back at the science that we did there, it was just so exciting to actually be able to track and map a contamination plume and then do some estimates on how long it will take to flush out of the groundwater system. And just working again with very talented people. Ken Kipp in Denver still works in our National Research Program, and it was a wonderful partnership between the National Research Program in Water and a district office. And worked in Maryland for a while as the chief of a groundwater and water quality contamination study. And that was probably the first job where I really had to kind of start to live vicariously through other people's accomplishments. So it wasn't really me out doing the field work and doing the science. But that was a great transition, and I really liked it because all of a sudden it wasn't just me or a couple people that I was working with. All of a sudden you were living vicariously through 20 people, you know, 20 right. people in the section, and you got to see all of their work. Then, of course, transitioned into some more administrative positions, first as the assistant regional hydrologist for NAWQA. That took us, family and husband and son, back to Denver. And, you know, to be part of the nation's first really systematic assessment of water quality conditions in the country was very rewarding. You know, it was a high level of congressional interest to answer a very simple question. Is our water getting better or is it getting worse? And so to be part of that, it was great. And of course, that's where I started working closely with former AD for geology, Pat Leahy. Bob Hirsch was very instrumental in the formulation. Very talented person, Bill Wilbur, still works on the national synthesis effort. So again, just talented people and working with them. And then, of course, it was a change out of the science position into either the chief financial officer or chief information officer position. And what I saw in both of those positions is that, again, although they weren't our traditional scientists working in those organizations, they are every bit as professional as we have in our science centers, and so are people in the administrative series and in our IT series. Again, kind of living vicariously through their accomplishments. And I think it was very, very rewarding to participate, have the effort to lead the agency's first clean financial audit. You know, that started to walk us to the additional bureaucracy that's just imposed, but to be able to go back to the citizens of the country and say we're spending our money wisely is important to do. People like Bill Gossman, no longer with the organization, Tim Calkins, very instrumental in those early efforts. After that move, as the associate director for operations, had an opportunity to come back to the program, to a program, and that was as the associate director for geography. And believe me, it was a lot of fun coming back to a science program because then you can be more of an advocate. You know, some of the administrative jobs, you know, their job is to say no right. to the right. people. Right. And you know that after 3 or 4 or 5 years, you just get tired of saying no.
Sure. And you're a scientist. And you're a scientist. Yeah.
So it was very fun. And as I look back over the AD for geography in the last 8 years, again, I would have to say that's where some of the biggest peaks and some of the biggest valleys have come in my career is this AD for geography. To be able to work with the early days of the national map, our Landsat program, our land cover efforts, our science impact efforts, couldn't ask for a better team of people to work with.
So, great.
Yeah.
So you were the first female program, first female program associate director at the USGS. What does that mean to you? I mean, does that have special meaning to you, or is there a significance there for you?
That's a good question. A little bit, I guess, because it was the maybe first time that a woman was able to move into a pure science, a leadership position at the highest level in the organization. We had, in fact, the job that I was in before, there were actually two associate directors. They were essentially the deputy director position, but we had split the function into two positions, one for programs and one for for operations, and Bonnie McGregor was associate director for programs in the Geological Survey, and me as associate director for operations. But I think getting back into really a true line management position to be the first woman was rewarding. And I guess I'll leave it at that because, you know, you work whether you are male or whether you're female. The challenges are the same. The opportunities right. are the same.
Well, I ask that because mm-hmm. science historically has been a very male-dominated
yeah.
field.
Yeah.
And so, I guess my follow-up to that would be, you know, what do you think of the way the USGS, and maybe the science community at large, the job they're doing in recruiting and developing women?
It's funny. I think at the most senior level, we've seen tremendous changes. We had an assistant secretary come out, and I think this would have been, it was 15 years ago or so, 16 years ago, I guess now. And she looked around the executive leadership team table. We didn't call it that at the time. It might have been a policy council or something. And I think there were probably two women, Bonnie McGregor and me. And she said, mark my words, the complexion of this table, the diversity of this table will look very, very different 10 years from now. And sure enough, if you look around the policy council or the executive leadership team now, it is predominantly women.
So how do you feel about the state of the geography discipline at the USGS?
I feel really good about it, Dave. Now, are there challenges? Of course there are. There are challenges in every programmatic division because our finances, from a bureau perspective, we are just barely keeping pace with inflation. We really do need some rather large influxes of additional resources into the bureau. So there are challenges not only in geography, but I think everywhere across the geological survey. I think why I am so excited about where geography is now and why I feel like it's a good time to kind of leave the organization is that we've got very talented people in place to kind of pick up the ball and carry it forward. And with the director's launching of the science strategy, I believe in my heart of hearts that geography can be the integrating science in this bureau. We think about the power of place and landscape analyses. And, you know, if we want to bring geology and water and biology assets to the table, I really do think geography can be the glue that can hold it together and actually be an integrating or weaving science for it. I think also if we just specifically look on our remote sensing side of the house, the Secretary of Interior has just announced the release of our opening up of our Landsat archive to the world, web-enabling that. So Landsat data will be going out at low or no cost over the internet. I think that is absolutely going to revolutionize how people start looking at the power of place, particularly when you start looking at issues like climate change and long-term assessments. So I'm very excited about that.
Great. What are some of the exciting developments you see in the field of geography or geospatial information as a whole?
Well, I think, quite honestly, applications like Google Earth and Microsoft's Virtual Earth have really opened up to the average citizen the power of Earth observations and geospatial information. So I think that has helped immensely. Now I think it's time for the federal government to come in and make sure we continue to provide the kind of information to the Google Earths and the Virtual Earths. Because as you look at those viewers, with the exception of the very high-resolution satellite imagery that's going into there, most of that is public data funded by the government. In fact, even the high-res commercial imagery, much of it was early funded by the federal government. So I think there's very significant roles for the federal government and continuing to make sure now that we've opened up the door so that people, my mother, my brother, can get access to this information, we want to make sure there's a continuous stream of this information as we go into the future. And that's not a certainty. It is going to take a lot of hard work on behalf of governments around the world to make sure that they can go back to their citizens and their funders to make sure that we have the next Landsat satellite so that Google Earth can get something after Landsat 5 and Landsat 7 are no longer on orbit.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. If you look at the demand for place-based information,
yes.
it's just yes. skyrocketing. And if you look at the people who are developing tools, they're people who yeah. don't have backgrounds in geography.
No,
they're
that's exactly right.
Really easy to use tools now that can create powerful resources.
You know, let me just give you a quick example on our land cover data. for so we collect land cover data coast to coast, border to border at, from our Landsat satellite. It's called a National Land Cover Data Set, a very, very rich data set that has 21 or 22 different covers of land cover, you know, row crop, small grains, forested areas, lakes, urban areas, impervious layers, you name it, all different, 20 or 22 different land cover categories. For so long, this data was in a database that only the most knowledgeable GIS professionals with heavy desktop tools could get access to this database. We entered into a partnership actually with a small Irish firm by the name of eSpatial that said, you know what, I want my mother and my brother to see this data set, and they are never going to have heavy, high-end GIS tools on their computer. So eSpatial came in and built, I guess what I would call is a thin client or some middleware that sits over the database, but then people can come in to the internet, draw their own polygon, or say, show me this national park, and in just seconds can get a pie chart showing what percentage of land cover type is within the, you know, for each of the land cover areas that are contained within that geographic area of interest, a pie chart that says it's this percentage of barren land, it's this percentage of water, it's this percentage of forested. And I think as soon as people start seeing how easy it is to get access to this, that's where we need to go. It's a democratization of our information. Now, I'm not saying that heavy-end GIS tools aren't going to be important into the future. They most certainly are for researchers. But we want citizens coming in and getting access to this information.
Right. It's very exciting. Very exciting. Cool stuff. So we talked about geography. How do you feel about where the USGS as a whole is headed?
I'm also optimistic about where the Geological Survey is headed. This science strategy that the director has put forward has absolutely nailed the key issues that are going to be facing this country, I'd argue the world, for the next decade. Okay, now, I think the internal challenge, now that those six or so issues have been identified and articulated, our internal challenge is to align our programs to those six or seven directions. And speaking quite candidly and honestly on my experience here in the Geological Survey, that's not always our strength. Because of the creativity and innovation of our individual scientists, we are an institution of letting a thousand flowers bloom. And what I worry about, at least in the 34 years that I've seen, that worked better when we had, 30 years ago, when we had the resources to allow a thousand flowers to bloom. We don't have the same resources that we had 30 years ago. And so I think the pressures on us or an institution are somehow continuing to facilitate that creativity and energy, but still make it very clear that we've got to prioritize our resources on some programmatic direction. If we don't do that, we just won't make it to the national scene and be viewed as relevant nationally or internationally. So we may have to step back temporarily, do some more prioritization, make sure our work is aligned to these science directions with the hope that in 5 years down the road that will pay off and then we can go back to maybe more flowers blooming.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Good analogy. So Bryant Kramer is stepping in as acting AD for geography.
Yep.
Could you tell us a little bit about Brian?
Yeah, I can. Bryant's had a very successful career in NASA, spent maybe on the order of 30 years in a number of different space centers around the world and around the country, NASA space centers, Goddard, Johnson, Langley, I think. He then came into headquarters, and then we worked with him quite closely on our partnership regarding Landsat 8, something that's called Landsat Data Continuity Mission. It's the satellite after Landsat 5 and Landsat 7. So as we were talking about the next plans for Landsat 8 and also addressing Dr. Marburger's challenge, the president's science advisor to the Earth observation community, about how do you affect this research to operations transition for terrestrial satellites. We're doing Landsat 1, Landsat 2, Landsat 5, Landsat 7 as one-off satellites. That's not how we handle atmospheric and oceanic weather satellites in this country. We have plans We have a couple of weather satellites on orbit, and yet we right now have plans for the next weather satellite. So you've got an operational schema in place. We haven't had that on the terrestrial side. So about the time Dr. Marburger issued us guidance to come forward with a plan, we started talking to people in NOAA and NASA and said, you know, we really need to start talking about getting some expertise from those organizations into our organization so that we can learn from them and what worked when they made the successful transition from research to operations for our weather satellites. How can we bring those same lessons to the Geological Survey for our terrestrial observation satellites? So Bryant came over to be a senior advisor for our National Land Imaging Program, or at least to, it's not a program per se. We're briefing the department, OMB, and the Hill before it's officially named a program, but the issue is the same. How do you transition our research activities to an operational mode? So he's been with us 4 or 5 months. He's very, very committed to what we do here. He's a medical doctor by training. I think he spent some time in Vietnam. He is just intellectually curious. And I think that's one of the best qualities that many people, but certainly an AD, can have in the organization. His next best quality is he's got a lot of common sense. And I think it's a wonderful combination of intellectual curiosity and common sense. He calls a spade, and I think, again, I think it's a very key quality for senior leaders to have in the organization, because I might editorialize just a little bit. I think one of the challenges that I've observed in my 34 years with the GSS, and maybe any organization, as you start to move up the career ladder, the information you start to receive becomes more biased, because people don't want to come to you with bad news. They only want to tell you what's right. working. And I think it is critical that senior leaders in the organization are open-minded and actually encourage people to say, hey, I just don't want the good news. I want the bad news, too. Right. And Brian's not afraid to hear bad news, and he's also not afraid to deliver it, as he's got to deliver it up the chain. Right. And I think those are key qualities for him. So he'll be acting Associate Director for Geography for the foreseeable future.
Okay, great. Well, Barb, again, thank you so much for your time, for doing this, and we'll be watching you and the great things that you're surely going to do at the space program, the WMO, and we also might drop by for a visit, so have a guest room made
during
up.
Either summer to spend some time on the lake or winter to ski, is
right.
that it?
Yeah. I think any time's a good time to show
okay.
up.
Okay, all right, good.
Seriously, I know I speak for a lot of people when I say it's been a great pleasure working with you, and we're really going to miss you, and wish you the best of luck.
Dave, thank you so much. I'll tell you, I said it in the beginning of the interview, I think there are there's no better organization to work for, so I really wish you and everybody else the best of luck.
Thank you. I like working here.
So, good.
And we really appreciate all of you out there for listening. For links to some of the things we mentioned in this interview and more, go to internal.usgs.gov/podcasts and look in the entry for this episode. CoreCast is a product of the U.S. Geological Survey, Department of the Interior. Until next time, I'm Dave Hebert. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful day.